Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago's sports station.
I'm still extremely optimistic, like most everybody is. The difference is going to be that there's been a little bit of downtime for everybody. So depending on how we've been continuing to remain active and the ability that they've been able to, we come in with the same mindset, trying to build on what we were building when we were cut off in the spring. And I continue to be optimistic about how positively we can roll forward. It's going to be a unique season because it's a short season. So, again, the teams that start off as well as they possibly can and can get to that finish line are going to be the ones that have a chance to be in it in the postseason.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That is the voice of Ricky Renteria. He talked yesterday, as did Rick Hahn, and you heard from the White Sox, and fun to think about getting back to work and getting issues with the lineup sorted out and talking about pitching. My God, you're going to need pitching.
Yeah, both guys talked about the plan ahead, and July 3rd is the first workout. There will be about 44 players participating in the camp, according to Hahn. And then I love the term taxi squad. It goes way back to the yep. NFL. But the taxi squad of 15 or 16 players will report to a site to be determined, Mully, around July 15th. So there's some time there to add to that list. But when you're starting to talk about getting back onto the field and starting to make evaluations about guys and where they are and how healthy their arms look and how live they are, their arms, you know, you can tell by the way that they're, how fluid they are and how much they kept in shape. That's exciting, because then it kind of shifts the focus. We all respect COVID-19 and how that will determine whether or not there actually is a season. But when you start to talk about potential lineups and decisions to make with the pitching staff, that's when it starts to get fun again. And I love the debate. Okay, where's Nick Madrigal? What's he going to do? Is he ready without a minor league apprenticeship? Can he, you know, can you plug him into this lineup? Did you see enough in spring training? That's the kind of fun considerations to and debates that we can have now that we can look ahead to the schedule.
Yeah, you know, I think that it does come down to service time considerations and all that, which are thrown out the window because it's only a 60-game season. So I would expect you'll see Nick Madrigal. I would expect that he will definitely be a part of the July 3rd crew. And, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking to myself, okay, so does Tim Anderson lead off and Moncada bat second and then probably Abreu? Where's Edwin Encarnacion? Is he going to be? I can sit here and spend half the show going down the lineup and who's going to line them up and how you're going to get everybody deployed to open the season. I think that Leury García will open at second base, but I think that Madrigal will make the bench deeper and could potentially replace him as you move forward. So I don't know exactly how things are going to go here with the White Sox. I don't know how exactly we're what we're talking about with the pitching, but I imagine that that these decisions have been weighing on Ricky's mind since the thing ended and since the possibility of a return. And I'm sure he's doing the same mental exercises that we all are when we think about putting together lineups and pitching matchups.
And they're all thoughts that we kind of have suppressed for a while because we knew that baseball was far off into the distance and you didn't expect to maybe ever have these discussions, or that was the fear. But now that we can, yeah, it's fun to look at. I heard two things about two guys yesterday that I thought stood out to me. You know, Madrigal, that is interesting, but I think the Sox lineup is going to be potent with or without him. I think he'll end up being a pretty good fixture at second base for years to come, and fans will love him. I don't know if it'll be sooner or later, but it will happen. But I heard it sounded like, and tell me if you got the same impression, it sounds like they're counting on Michael Kopech. It sounds like they
sure
believe that he can help
yep
from the get-go in a way that every Sox fan had hoped that he can and is excited about. And number two, seems like Rodon might be part of the mix, and I don't know what role that will be in, and I think that will be all part of this ongoing thing about what we get out of starting pitching and what the expectations are in this truncated season. But if Carlos Rodon is added and you incorporate that left arm into this pitching staff, that's a really deep staff, and that makes the White Sox even more dangerous, I think, because of all the other weapons that they have. And you're excited about their offense, but you look at the pitching, and pitching still wins in baseball. And boy, Rodon and Kopech were the two names that really stood out yesterday to me.
Yeah, you know, I think it's been a situation since the White Sox had their offseason and kind of inched their way into it, right? Didn't kind of go crazy. Then all of a sudden, you know, boom, Grandal, and then they're adding, and, you know, the Dallas Keuchel thing and even Gio Gonzalez. You know, you thought, okay, well, they're going to be an improved team. Kopech wasn't ready. I mean, he had just started a game, but I don't think that they felt that he needed to begin at the major league level, that perhaps it was wiser to have him in the minors and get him some starts. And then you had the wild card that is Rodon. So, you know, it is what? June 26th today, right? So they're going to be reporting on the 3rd. And then you'll have roughly 3 weeks of spring training. That would be pretty much on the schedule for Carlos Rodon's return. Now, I don't know that his return is as a starter or help in the bullpen, but he is pretty much coming back at that point from the Tommy John surgery. Now, we know that Kopech had come back from the Tommy John surgery, and the time passage was there, and you had the full year plus, and now you were looking at him probably coming up at some point. Had we a normal season, he'd already be up and on the roster. Now you bring him in, you got 3 weeks. You know, presumably Gio Gonzalez had some elbow issues or sore arm and had to withdraw a little bit from training camp. Presumably he's back. You know, the White Sox are actually stronger today than they were when this coronavirus ended training camp.
Yes, because of the guys that I mentioned, yeah, because of everything else that's in play. And I wonder this as a Sox fan, and I guess looking at just watching sports in general, when you have a young team come into the season that has a lot of expectations. And that's where the Sox were when we last saw them, right? They were in Arizona, and they were thought to be a team that could surprise some people. And there were expectations, and you wondered how they would handle those. Does that change at all because of the unorthodox way that we're looking at this season, because of the different circumstances and where, you know, all 30 teams can believe this morning they have a chance to make the playoffs because it's such an odd set up. Do you think that the weight of those expectations is lighter or lessened because of that? And could that benefit the Sox as well?
Yeah, I do, David. I do. I think that, you know, as much as we want to talk about how you got to start from scratch and you better be ready to go and ready to rumble, I think that all of this has worked in the favor of the White Sox. You know, the term, you know, young and dumb is an insult at some points. But what the idea is that if you are as young as some of these players are. You don't realize the weight of the pressure that is on you when you hit the next level. I think that plays into the hands of a Louis Robert and mm-hmm. Madrigal and whomever you want to mention who are making a debut with the Chicago White Sox at this point. So I don't think that any of the veteran guys were really in a position where they had the weight of the world on their shoulders. I don't feel like maybe the closest would be Lucas Giolito because he emerged as the leader of the staff and you want that to continue. But, you know, he seems very strong mentally. Like he figured out whatever the physical issue was and he's mentally ready to deal with it. So I'm not worried about him. I'm not saying that young guys don't feel pressure, but I think that it's more an opportunity to kind of show off. And I think that for a lot of players, it's just this kind of getting to that starting point. You know, you've been sitting there and you've been trying to find your place and you're running up and down the line. Where do I fit in? Can I get one of the, excuse me, sir, can I just get in here? And now, boom, off you go. So the race is going to start and I think they're going to be ready to rumble.
And everything has been simplified. You don't have to really overanalyze things because the game was taken away from you to some degree. You were sitting there for 3 months unable to do what you love to do, and now you're back, and now maybe you're thinking less, reacting more, and just playing the sport in the way that you always have known how, and maybe that benefits a team like the White Sox that low on experience but high on ability and potential, and maybe that will, you know, there's not going to be that pressure or maybe those expectations may have created earlier in the season.
312-644-6767. Mike is listening online. Let's get to Mike.
Hey, Mike.
Hey, good morning, guys. How you doing?
Good.
When I was thinking about with this short season that they're going to have, wouldn't it make sense to put Madrigal out there and see what you got? Since you're going 60 games, to me, I mean, it's all about the future here. And I would put him out there right out of the box and let's see what we got.
You know, I'm not against that idea. I think that, Leury García had a really good season last year and probably won this job in training camp or maybe just because they didn't want to get to Madrigal yet. But I'd have no problem with that decision. I think that you kind of let the veteran guy coming off a good year have his moment, but I would like to see Madrigal too. I got no problem with that.
Me too. Make it a baseball decision. Nothing else should factor in. If he comes in, he's hot and he looks like he's ready, play him immediately. Get the most out of it because every game matters, and if you think he can squeeze out two or three good weeks out of the kid, let him play.
Gideon is listening in Skokie. Hey, Gideon, how are you?
Hey, Gideon.
I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Great, buddy. Great.
So I think the expectation levels on the Sox are actually higher now than they were back in March and April when we were actually going to have the full season. And the reason why I think they're higher is because of all the talk Sox fans have been doing on Twitter, including myself. I think I've been raising the expectation level from fans of other teams that the Sox will do well, and I've been bashing on the Cubs. So I think the expectation level is now that the Sox need to do better to prove our expectation. And then really quickly in terms of the pitching staff, I think you have Giolito and Keuchel, obviously. You have Gonzalez. I think you put Cease in there, and then I think you pencil in Reynaldo Lopez to start out the season. And then you have Kopech, who will hopefully come back from injury pretty soon. And you have Rodon, and you can take Lopez out and have a very short leash with him and maybe move him into the bullpen for a long relief role.
Yeah, see, I want Kopech from day one.
Yep.
I think he's ready to go, and, let's not hold off on that one. You know, David, there's a lot there from Gideon, but I do think that you know, there are guys we haven't talked about in a while. You know, Aloy is probably going to bat around sixth in this lineup, at least initially. Nomar Mazara, I don't know what he is, but I know that moving him down in the lineup the way they are, if he's in the seventh hole or the eighth, I don't know. I don't know that there aren't guys in this lineup that won't be breaking out to the point where they got to move up, and where you move them up because you got guys. I think it's fascinating, the possibilities. They could really be a good baseball team, and it's all uncertain and it's all unknown, but there are some real, you know, I mean, I don't know what Louis Robert is going to do, but from everything I've seen from him, going to a spring training game and watching him hit a triple, getting a chance to watch in some of those minor league games and seeing some highlights, I think this kid is ready to play and could just explode onto the scene.
You don't know what he's going to do besides win Rookie of the Year?
Bare minimum.
You haven't even mentioned Yasmani Grandal yet either.
No, I mean, there you
marquee,
go.
No pun intended, free agent signing. I mean, that's a 25 home run guy in the middle of your lineup too.
He's a switch hitter. He could bat anyway. He could lead off if you wanted him to. I mean, he is going to make pitchers work to get him out. That's how he's played. And you know, what did he? How many homers did he have last year? He had a lot. He really kind of broke through with that a little bit. So it's a great point, Kevin. It's another one.
I think the more you guys talk about the White Sox, the only question I have is, will they have to wear masks at the parade?
I like
Hopefully,
it.
Yeah, 28 like home runs for Yasmani last year.
28. That's not bad. Okay, I'm just saying that, you know, you think about this through that lineup. Some of these guys, right? You know, what is Edwin Encarnacion? He's like hit 30 homers like every year for 75 years or something. It's just insane, you know, 9 consecutive years with 30 homers, something like that. So now he's going to somehow, I don't know how, but he's going to get 30 and 60
games. If he hits 30 this year, he's MVP.
Let me say that.
I'm on a limb there. Yeah.
But he does it every year. Doesn't that count? 312-644-6767. It's Fully and Haw on the Score.
How do you adjust your expectations for your team as the GM, and then just as a baseball fan looking at the 29 other ones, how do you kind of adjust expectations with this new schedule?
Well, look, it goes back to the old saying, you know, you're going to win 20, you're going to lose 20. It's what you do with the other 20 that makes the difference.
Rick Hahn. He's getting in the mode of things. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Yeah, always comes down to winning 20, losing 20, and then the other 20.
Yeah,
right?
I think I heard that somewhere yesterday morning, and then heard it again in the afternoon. Pretty funny, yep. Rick. And I think the White Sox are in the situation of, if they get off to a good start, it will ease any pressure that they might feel. And you look at their pitching, and nobody's going to run away. You don't think anybody's going to run away with it. But I don't know that I agree that the expectations are heavier or bigger now, as I think Gideon suggested, than they were in March when things, you know, stopped and paused. Because I feel like now everybody feels like they can win and get to the playoffs, because it's – you know, they have a chance that might have been greater than before. So it almost takes the pressure off teams like the White Sox, where there was more focus on, as a team, one of the up-and-coming teams, because of the offseason they had, because they added Grandal, because they're adding young players in their system that are now ready. I think now it's like, well, you know, it almost – you have a – I don't want to say a built-in excuse, but this is an abnormal season. It's an unorthodox approach. Nobody's ever been through it before. Just play baseball, and if you focus on that, talent will prevail, and the White Sox have a ton of talent.
Look, I think the pitching is really where you just stop for a second and think about the group that they rolled out last year, and now you're adding Dallas Keuchel and Gio Gonzalez and Michael Kopech and maybe even Carlos Rodon. So that is – you want to talk about reinforcements. You're adding basically like a starting pitching staff to your starting pitching staff. And you already have some guys that you're really pleased with, and you really have good hopes and dreams for. So I think it's a pretty good situation. And you know, let's talk about the Cubs, right? You feel good about your first four. And again, you've got age on that group, so you worry about it. But let's say you feel real good about it. You know, where are you at with the fifth starting position? The fifth starting position, you know, Tyler Chatwood, where are you at with him? Alec Mills, is he the guy? And how deep do you go into your pitching staff then when we start talking about how you're going to line them up and your openers and your closers and all that? It would have been nice if you had Cole Hamels. You know, he held that rotation together at the beginning of last year. I'm just saying, you need another starter. Do you trust Tyler Chatwood to be that guy?
Well, I think you're going to have to. And the one thing about Chatwood is that, you know, the stuff has never been in question. It's always been command and control. You know, Cole Hamels' health, be honest, if he were on the Cubs, if he were on your team, if you're the Atlanta Braves, do you wonder what kind of shape Cole Hamels is going to return in and how healthy he's going to remain? Those are the big questions surrounding Cole Hamels, no matter how much money he is making. So, yeah, the Cubs have questions beyond the first four starters. But the first four starters, you feel like, are guys that you can count on to maybe get you off to the kind of start that you need. The Cubs' questions, to me, go beyond the starting pitching. I mean, that bullpen is full of guys who are question marks. And it begins with Craig Kimbrell because he makes the most money and he's got the most he commands the most attention. But the other players in that bullpen aren't proven, and they're not guys that you count on. And maybe they come back and they surprise everybody, but the Cubs bullpen issues are what would give me the greatest bit of concern when projecting any kind of success for them. I just don't trust the bullpen yet.
I got to tell you, I think that if I'm a Cubs fan, you know, I'm holding my breath on Yu Darvish, because he has tweeted out some things that make you wonder if he wants to be a part of this thing. And he has to be a part of this thing, because without him, you know, then what? You start with the professor. You got John Lester, has a lot of age on him. I mean, I love John Lester, great veteran player, but, you know, you're going to the well yet again. And Jose Quintana, I mean, I'm just saying, as much as you like the first four and you trust them because they got the backside of the baseball card, mm-hmm. if you don't have Darvish in the front of that group, that changes everything.
Well, yeah.
And again, you're moving guys up a role. You're moving, you know, Tyler Chatwood up a role. That guy, you know, you hold your breath when he's pitching.
Well, projections are based on the best possible outcome for a player. And if you are projecting the Cubs' pitching rotation, Yu Darvish is projected as your ace. He's got to be. Yep. And if you remove the ace from any pitching staff, you look at the Astros, and I know people, they're going to be a punchline, and they are a team that you can't talk about the Astros without really thinking about the sign stealing and all
scandal.
That. But you took their ace away in Gerrit Cole. Their other ace, Justin Verlander, had groin surgery in March. You take away an ace out of any staff, and it changes the way you project. So Darvish is as important to the Cubs season as anybody on that roster. So, yeah, what he does and how he's feeling right now is the number one question that remains unanswered if you're a Cubs fan.
Yeah, listen, I think that, you know, you look at what they have and you think, you know, that's enough and they're going to do fine and there's no issues, but there's no issues until there's issues. And you know, you're not sitting here counting up to seven starters that you think have a shot. You're really talking about four guys in a question mark at the fifth spot, and you can't afford to really have any question marks at all in a 60-game season.
And plus, they're core players, they're position players. You know, you don't have as many questions about. You like the veteran presence. You like the fact that they, you know, can play under these unusual circumstances. You like the fact that, you know, Kyle Schwarber, you know, it could be in for a big year being the designated hitter, the primary designated hitter for the Cubs. And you like a lot of what their offense has to offer, but it will come down to, you know, pitching in the bullpen. Can they protect the lead if they can get one? I think both teams, as we talked about yesterday, in a 60-game season, they could be between 30 and 35 wins. That's a realistic expectation. And if you're around 35 wins, you're going to make the playoffs. And if these teams are flirting with postseason berths, it's going to be, you know, a fun sprint to the finish here once we get started.
All righty, we're going to bring in David Sampson next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the score.
I've been optimistic on this one for a while. We're fortunate to have some of the best medical professionals in our city helping us, both from Advocate and Northwestern. And I'll give credit to the city and the city's health department as well. And there was always a path to bring fans back into Wrigley, obviously a much smaller group than would normally at 10 games. The fact that Governor Pritzker got there ahead of us, it was obviously a good sign. And we're working with the city, having great conversations with the mayor's staff on this topic. And we know our fans, if safe, and if it can be done with the right precautions, would love to come back to the ballpark. And so we do see that happening this year.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score. That's Crane Kenny. He was on yesterday on the station with Dan Bernstein, and we're delighted to welcome in David Sampson, the former president of the Miami Marlins and now a podcaster for CBS Sports. He joins us on the Al Pamonte Ford Hotline, Al Pamonte Ford in Melrose Park. David, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, David.
Good morning. I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Well, it's great to catch up with you. We have so many questions and so many things we want to talk about pertaining to the return to play. And you know, for me, it's always been a question as I fantasized about baseball actually returning. The idea of how do you handle the top young players in your system? Do you bring them up? Are they the taxi squad? Do you need to have more players that can step right into the major league team? How do you handle a couple of guys that might have had injuries that are kind of coming back slowly? Do you want them around you? Do you wait and try to get them to your facility and for some kind of mini camp in a month or two? How do teams go about it? What do you do when you're putting together a group of players for a truncated season like this?
Well, you're now at the table for one of the big debates that's going on inside all 30 teams' front office. So there's so many competing interests. The first thing I'm doing is I'm looking at my team and the opportunity I have with a 60-game truncated season to make it to the playoffs, given that right now the playoffs are not expanded. So in expanded playoffs, if there were 16 playoff teams and I'm a team that's not good, I'm thinking that I can easily delude myself by saying one little hot streak, get off well, and I've got a chance to make the playoffs. So therefore, I'm going to have as many both minor league and major league free agents, sort of the fringe 4A guys is what we used to call them. Those are the people you invite to spring training. They do not have a roster spot, but they're people maybe at $1 million split contract if they make the team. And you want as many of them as possible around in case of injuries or COVID positive tests to provide you depth. Those would be a big majority of my 60-man squad, which I'm putting together. The reason why, as a non-contending team, I'm not bringing up my young players, I'm not starting the clock on them, I'm not losing a year of control or getting them to arbitration faster, because the likelihood of success for my team is not great. But if you're the Cubs, let's say, where you're in a very competitive situation in your division, and you feel as though that you really have a good team, you don't want to waste, let's say, a year of Chris Bryant, and you want to make the playoffs and win, you actually are going to bring up people faster than you normally would have. It's sort of the anti-Chris Bryant hold off. Because of the sprint nature of this season, you have your best chance to go at it with your best guys. From an ownership standpoint, it's very confusing because what you do this year could be very costly in future years. So you have to be right.
Is that related to your belief that big market teams have an advantage in this shortened season?
It's a guarantee, because these big market teams have the ability to sign a better quality of those minor league free agents or those major league free agents, give them a slightly higher split contract in order to attract them. What they don't offer as much as the teams with smaller payrolls is opportunity. So the Marlins, we would always have an easier time getting these minor league free agents to come in and invite them to spring training, because they always felt they had, their agents would tell them, hey, you got a chance to make this team. They've got 10 openings. Whereas a team like the Cubs usually does not have that number of openings. But this year, I think it's different. If I'm one of those unsigned players, I want to get myself into a camp with a team that is favored to win, not one that is not.
So we're here in Illinois, where we today marks the beginning of a phase four of a five-phase return to reopening the economy. And what it means is that you can have gatherings up to 50 people. Restaurants are now going to be able to have people inside them. We're just getting to this point. Entertainment options limited, reopening of movie theaters, performing arts centers, etc. You know, there is a thought that if we can get to phase five, we can have crowds. And there is this thought that perhaps you could have 8,000 people at U.S. Cellular Field, at Wrigley Field, and you could get basically some of that revenue, but also you could get some crowd noise and all the rest of it. How realistic are these ideas, and do you think this is going to be happening around the country, or given the kind of surge of the virus in different areas, is this going to shut down fairly quickly?
I think that it's become such a political issue that going back to shutdown is something that nobody wants to do. And I think that teams are looking for any dollar of revenue they can find. So when you've got Crane Kenny, who's in charge of a business which is bleeding money, which needs to find every dollar of revenue it can find, and there's an opportunity to get 8,000 people into Wrigley, you're going to get 8,000 people into Wrigley. What you need to look for is what they're going to do with ticket prices and sections. Are they going to make it social distancing with 8,000 of the more expensive seats and close the upper deck? Or are they going to maybe spread everyone around, and that would lower the per game revenue that you would have, because you can't charge, you know, in the outfield what you can charge above the dugout? You also have to know that part of the baseball protocols that the players agreed to have distancing by players in the dugout, having players not in the dugout in the stands when they're not playing, having only coaches, managers in the dugout. So all of the best seats, in theory, should be taken by players. And then you've got to deal with security if you've got fans in the stadium sitting in the stands, you know, 20 rows behind players. So there's all sorts of logistical issues you have to consider. And I think that money will rule the day, because people have now become, I don't want to say lazy or not caring. I want to say they've been willing to change their risk calculus as it relates to COVID-19 for whatever reason, whether it's based in fact or fantasy. The risk calculus of many fans and business owners is, listen, we need to open. We need to have the ability to have a paying customer, whether it's a restaurant or a baseball team. So I think there's no going back, even though I'm sitting here talking to you from Florida and I'm scared to leave my apartment because it's so bad here.
So how big of a risk is that for baseball, though, David, when you look at the possibility of teams having players test positive and having to quarantine whoever it may be for 10 to 14 days, and what that might mean to the course of a season for the sport? I mean, the risk involved is enormous, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's a risk at all. I think you just used a word that I'm not using anywhere on my show, nothing personal ever. You just said the possibility of players testing positive. It's a guarantee. We're already seeing players test positive when camp hasn't even started. There will be positive tests during the course of spring training and the season. And the reality is that baseball and other sports have made a decision that they're not going back to the way it was in March when Rudy Gobert tested positive for the NBA and they shut it down. Now they're going to take the positive test, they're going to isolate the player, and they're going to hope through contact tracing that they can stop the spread. But I've been in a clubhouse for 18 years. If, you know, somebody sneezes in a major league clubhouse and, you know, 10 stalls away, you hear, bless you. That's how close it is. And I know that we're trying to separate lockers, keep people apart, but it all will depend how the players behave and whether or not they respect the protocols. The risk of not doing it is you've got 10 players in the middle of your season who test positive, but the games go on and you're forced to use the depth in your taxi squad to field the team. And that's why the bigger markets with the deeper rosters have the advantage.
It's fascinating to contemplate these things, and you know, it's obviously very disconcerting to think about people getting ill and how, you know, I know that young professional athletes are the type of people that have a good immune system, are going to be able to bounce back. But what if there's some kind of tragedy? You know, we got a lot of older managers and coaches around the game, umpires. I mean, you stop and think about the possibility of a death connected to this, and it changes all of the calculus completely.
But it's a risk calculation that everybody's making, right? Every time we get on a team charter, every flight I took as president of a team, I went through the thought, and it's obviously so horrible and so negative, but the thought of an accident. Every time there's a team bus that we would take to the ballpark or back to the team hotel, I'm always thinking of the possible risk that we're taking. With COVID-19, these are also calculable risks. And I understand why people are making the decisions they're making, but as a team president, I would have a very hard time knowing that I was in any way responsible for a fan getting sick because of something that I had control of that I didn't do better. So, for example, if a fan gets into a car accident, God forbid, driving down to a game, there's nothing I could do to control that. But if a fan gets COVID because I didn't clean the ballpark properly, or the protocols of cleaning were not followed and it wasn't done the exact way it could have, or I was so interested in revenue, which I always was, that I allowed a 70-year-old person to come to a ballpark and sit and he was too close, or the concession stands were not done perfectly, I would feel a responsibility even having this fan sign a waiver, which, by the way, if Crane Kenny and the rest of baseball team presidents are not changing the language on their tickets to reflect this assumption of risk covering not a batted ball in the stands or a bat in the stands, but also COVID-19, I would not open my facility until I had that waiver signed. But that still would not change my risk calculus, and I'm not having it until I have more understanding of COVID-19.
David, I think history will remember this as a missed opportunity for baseball and the bickering that went on for too long, and they could have had, you know, been back sooner rather than later. I just wonder, how do you divvy up responsibility for what happened and how long it took to solve? And what do you think finally ended it?
I think it's 50-50, owners and players. I think both sides are responsible. I don't believe in the narrative that it was the player's fault, and I don't believe in the narrative it was the owner's fault. And I also don't believe in the narrative that baseball would have been playing right now if they had behaved better. It is way too early in the recovery from COVID to believe that there would be games, regular season games, starting in 10 days. It's beyond credibility. So for me, I've always thought that August 1st was going to be the day. Back in March, I was saying that. And I was off by a couple of days or a week, and that's all. And I think history will not look back on this any other way other than such uncertain economic times that the owners and players didn't even understand what they were arguing about. They were trying to protect a scenario that they couldn't even contemplate, because that's how out of the ordinary this global pandemic is. Unprecedented. The bigger problem for me is if this rancor bleeds into the next collective bargaining negotiation, which I'm afraid it will. And if it does, and there is a work stoppage in 2 years that is not COVID-related, I think that will hurt the game far worse than what went on here the last 3 months.
Joel Sherman in the New York Post wrote a thing that was kind of interesting. He went back to June 4th, 2019, and broke down the number of pitchers that had been used. And now this is after the proper spring training and a normal season, basically a normal preparation for a season, and at that point, 19 of the 30 teams had played 60 games, so it wasn't even every team. But at that point, they had used 625 pitchers, which is including field position players that were brought on late in games, and 242 different starters. So if you use last year, every team needs 8 different starters plus and 20 different pitchers plus to get through this season. Now, that doesn't take into account a 3-week spring training, the possibility of COVID infection, as we've talked about, the various elements that are new to this thing. How many pitchers are you going to need? How many starters do you need? Is this what's going to really determine who wins this thing, the depth of pitching?
There's no question. That's what it is every year. And what worries me more than COVID this season for baseball players, I'm worried, and you should look for hamstring injuries, look for oblique injuries, shoulder soreness, elbow soreness, because everybody's going to want to be ready for their opening day, because every single game almost counts as 3 in a regular season, because it's 60 versus 160. So that's not exact math. Call it 2.8, whatever you want to say. So you go on a 3-game winning streak, and it's as though you've won almost 10 in a row during the season. And when you can do that, you know that you're on some sort of great run. So pitchers are going to want to start going longer and throwing harder, faster. Position players are going to be at the plate, swinging very hard, looking for their launch angle and exit velocity without having the right number of at-bats to prepare, because these players are coming off an off-season. We may not look at it that way, but that's the reality. Since March, they have not played. That's practically a full off-season, and they have not had the preparation off-season that they would normally have because it hasn't been available to them. So I'm very worried about non-COVID-related injuries, and then add COVID on top of that, and you need depth, which is why there's a 60-man squad now. It's unheard of, but you're going to need, for me, putting my roster together, I'm looking 35-25. I need 35 pitchers available to me at all times, because I think that's what I'm going to need to get through a 60-game season.
Wow, that's something. David, thank you. That's great stuff. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, David.
Hey, have a great day. Thanks, guys.
You too.
That is David Sampson. Joy to talk to him. That's fascinating, David. Think about that. You need 35 pitchers.
35 pitchers. Very opinionated guy. His podcast, Nothing Personal, is really good inside stuff. He's strong in everything he has to say, and he's unafraid, as we just heard.
All right. We're going to take a moment, and we'll come back with your calls, 312-644-6767. It's Mully and Haw on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.